This conference will now be recorded.
I will call to order the Planning Commission meeting for July 15th, 2020. First item on the agenda is the minutes from the June 17th meeting.
Motion to file the minutes.
Motion made. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Any discussion? As this is virtual, we will have to take a roll call vote. Steve.
Aye.
Terry.
Aye.
Cletus.
Aye.
Jeff.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion carries. Next item on the agenda is the tiny home standards discussion, and I will hand it off to Sarah.
All right. Now let's see if I can remember how to share my screen here. Okay, so what I did was I went ahead, oh, perfect. I think that's it. Uh-oh, can I not right now? Well, maybe I can't see my screen. Okay. What I went ahead and did is, in your packets, you would have received a bunch of information that kind of goes through what standards are currently, some information from the Planning Association, kind of the national level, which is a lot of where I did some of my research. I did some staff comments kind of on where some of the Wilmer standards are currently. And then we'll kind of go from there. Really tonight, what we're looking for is just to start conversation. And the reason this is initiated, hesitate saying this sometimes, but I think it's worth knowing that there's interest for tiny homes in town, but staff has kind of tried to put a little bit of a pause on that, just because we know that there are some standards and there are some discussions that we need to have as a planning commission and as a land use body before we move forward with that, because there's just some concerns as to how we could can't restart it. So okay. Concerns with how we would actually feasibly be able to allow them right now. I will preface this conversation that there's a lot of like gray area when it comes to tiny homes, especially with cities, because a lot of them, it's a relatively new concept. Like the thought of tiny homes has been around for a while, but for cities to actually take on standardizing them and putting them in their zoning ordinance is fewer and further between. And so we've got some good examples to go through and some thoughts, some kind of thought-provoking questions to talk about. At the end, what we'll be looking for is really just a consensus of the direction that needs to be gone. I think regardless of whether we end on a note of we want to go towards limiting them or we want to go towards explicitly setting standards for them, something needs to be done. There's a couple of gaps that are of pretty major concern to me when we were doing some analysis of like where our zoning ordinance is at. So we'll talk about those options at the end. Screen sharing is not working for me, unfortunately, right now, but you should have all of the information you need on your end in that packet. So we'll just go through it that way. So first, what is a tiny home? The building code on March 31st of 2020, the Minnesota Building Code adopted Appendix Q of the International Building Code. And Appendix Q defines a tiny house as a dwelling that's under 400 square feet. In some of the tiny home villages that you see in some of the, I know there's one being proposed in St. Paul that's looking for a new location right now, just because the actual site location wasn't adequate for the development because of its proximity to trains and some other things. Some of the houses there are a little bit bigger than 400 square feet, some are under, and then some you see more in that like 500 to 600 square foot range. So something that's significantly reduced than what we are accustomed to for dwelling. types of tiny homes, there's kind of three main categories. There's stick built, which would be like a tiny house built on a foundation on the site. There's modular, so something, you know, just like a manufactured home or something like that, it would be moved onto the site. Often you see those on foundations, sometimes not. And then there's like the mobile or chassis mounted tiny houses, and those are the ones where you see people like pulling them behind their trucks. Obviously at 400 square feet, there are RV campers that are bigger than tiny houses sometimes. So those are kind of, keep those in the back of your mind as like the three kind of main categories. Why tiny houses? Why are we talking about this now? So like I mentioned, the building code adopted this ability for Minnesota to regulate and our building officials to regulate tiny homes under 400 square feet with this new adoption of Minnesota State Building Code that went into effect in the end of March. Before that, you could build a tinier house, but you kind of had to meet some standards that were really clunky, especially for like the loft area. Often in a tiny house, you see like a loft area where the sleeping area, and maybe the ceiling on that is only like 3 feet or something like that. And often ceilings have to be at least 4 or 5. So the appendix doesn't address everything, all standards of a tiny house. So anything that's not mentioned in Appendix Q has to be met by the rest of the building code and still has to be the standard in that. So like distance between buildings still has to be, I think it's like somewhere between 6 and 10 feet, or you have to have certain fire rated walls, different things like that. But that Appendix Q allows for like some of those loft space variations and different things that just make more sense for that size of a structure. Like I mentioned before as well, I've got some concerns about the gaps in our zoning code, especially when we first received even kind of the thought of somebody presenting something. Often before you see anything, a developer will give me a call and say, hey, how does this work? Or what do I need to take into consideration? Or what, you know, what planning commission approvals will we need? And as we were looking through it, there were some red flags that came up of things where we couldn't prohibit certain things, but they couldn't quite get what they wanted on their end, and it would piece up things funny. We'll talk about it more later. Many entities, again, have yet to regulate the tiny homes that they live in, often, especially in counties, not so much cities, but especially in counties. Tiny homes are kind of this world still where regulatory bodies maybe kind of turn a blind eye, and if you don't happen to get caught, like you see all of the tiny home TV shows and all these people like on social media traveling with these tiny homes, and you're like, I want to do that. Or, you know, how in the world are they, how are they doing that? And as you look more into the world of what cities and counties have actually regulated, I think a lot of them are kind of riding this really interesting gray line, where maybe they're not technically supposed to do that, or they're not quite given the right permissions, but maybe they leave before they're caught, kind of thing. One thing to consider, one perspective to consider with these, with this tiny home conversation too, is to look at our housing trends. And maybe by a lot of cities haven't chosen to address tiny homes, or some have chosen to explicitly prohibit tiny homes. Maybe tiny homes are just another piece of the puzzle. I'm not saying they're going to solve all of our housing needs. I don't think any one solution is going to solve all of our housing needs. It's so great at this point. And so, you know, is it, where do we stand on this? Is this something where we're going to put our foot down and prohibit, or do we view it from that perspective? So, why specifically in Willmar? So I had the EDC give me some stats, and as we're working on our comp plan, it was perfect timing because I could pull some of the data that we've started to pull for that information. So, first, our housing stats. So Willmar continues to see a really tight housing market, which has been a trend for quite a while now. Our housing supply, we go like on a, how many months supply do we have right now? As of June, the West Central Realtors Association reported we were down from 3.4 to 3 months. And I think, we should have had Aaron tell me. I can't remember what our goal is, but it's significantly higher than that. It's like you want 12 months of stock or something like that. We've also, so very interestingly, because this is really new information as we're starting to analyze this in the second quarter here, we've seen a really significant drop in the number of new listings, the number of sale closings, and the number of housing, just homes for sale across the board. We were anywhere from, so new listings were down 17%, sales being closed were down 28%, and homes for sale, so houses actually be listed on the market, were down 22%. So we're kind of seeing this like stalemate thing going on too, which means that just not a lot of people are moving around, but that also means that those who want to move around don't really have the option right now, or have a much tighter option if that's where they're wanting to go. Erin also, you know, mentioned that really there's an importance of looking at kind of how many units are being built and how are we coming along with that. So we've seen an increase in the number of units being built each year from 2016 to 2020. So each year we've seen more and more houses being built each year. And yet, even though we're adding all of these units into town, unique opportunities, so that the big housing project out on County Road 5, they're just finishing up their first building. They're due to open in August, and they already have 66 of 72 units leased. So they're starting on their second building with kind of full steam ahead, no plans to hold back anytime soon, because they're seeing that fill up very quickly. And same with 15th Street Flats, that's full as well, which is 48 units. Housing trends, or household trends, is another thing that you could consider, and that I came across a lot in other communities when they're considering just overall tiny homes and how does that fit in with the average family these days. So in 2010, the last census, we were hovering right around 2.5 people per household. It's estimated that in 2020, we'll see about 2.3. And if you kind of zoom out and look from about 1970 to 2020, we've seen that decreasing trend for quite some time, and it's expected for that to continue. So we're seeing less and less people per household, which for some people justifies being smaller living space. You just don't need a large house for two or two and a half people. Also, we compiled the number of acres that each zoning, that each residential zone we have right now, how many acres are taken up by each of those. R5, so something like unique opportunities, we only have about 30 acres of R5 zoning in town, and all of that's spoken for at this point. Whereas something like an R1 or an R2, so like your single and two family homes, occupy about 1,800 acres worth of land in town. So we obviously, that one two family house takes up a lot more space. Our minimum lot size is about 8,000 square feet right now. The one thing that I want to calculate and take that one step further is like how many units per acre can we get in each of those, right? If there's only 27 acres of high density multifamily housing, how many units are we fitting into that 27 acres, which we will keep working on. So if we move on, we've seen kind of overall what tiny homes are, some trends that we're seeing in town. If we talk a little bit about the concerns we have, or kind of just where our ordinance stands right now, we have no minimum square footage that a house could be. So a house could, if somebody came and there was a vacant R2 or R1 lot in town and they wanted to build a tiny house, there's really nothing that would prohibit that. The area where that becomes a red flag is then you consider that lot that was made for, you know, like quote unquote your typical house that you see these days, 1,800 square feet, whatever it might be. A tiny house is going to have a smaller value because it's a smaller square footage. And so you're decreasing how the tax value of that property, because we required that parcel of land to be 8,000 square feet with the PUD. So if it was a kind of a planned unit development, we could see 4,000 square feet, But when you consider that a tiny house is usually under 400 square feet, for there to be a 400 square foot house on all of these 4,000 square foot parcels, to me that scale just doesn't add up. Usually within a tiny house development, you'll see a lot of open space. You'll see a lot of shared common green space. So you're not, ultimately you won't lose that. It's just gonna look a little bit different because the land that maybe that homeowner owns is gonna be smaller and more to scale of what their actual house size is. And then there'll be a lot more community space and green space in that way. Other things that we regulate, so, sometimes there's concern because of the mobility of tiny houses, right? If they were on, like if they were chassis mounted or mobile, the aesthetics of them become kind of a concern. Everybody knows that there are some concerns and very vocal voices that our mobile home parks aren't in the greatest of shape at all times. They're up to people's standards visually. And so then the question becomes like, are we just allowing essentially a smaller version of mobile home parks throughout our community? We have pretty heavy standards for like manufactured homes. If somebody wants to bring in a manufactured home in an R2 zone, they have to meet quite a few regulations. Their roof has to be pitched. We go as far to say like they have to have horizontal vinyl siding on their house or something of that nature. There is the ability for the city to say, we're going to allow this, but we want you to meet very certain or very specific aesthetic standards. I think the majority of what I've seen is most cities, especially if it's going to be in town, we want to see something stick built, or if it's going to be moved in, it needs to be on a foundation. Those kind of requirements I don't think would be very out of the realm of this. We don't want to have a bunch of tiny homes coming and going. That's not really the purpose of what we're looking at doing. We want these to be permanent homes here in Willmar. So with that, there's lots of other resources out there that we can continue to look at. Bemidji is a really good example of a community that has actually created a subdivision ordinance section that specifically addresses tiny homes. So their minimum lot square footage is like 600 square feet, I think it is. And then of course there's, they have to have 50% open space and some other requirements within those standards. So there are cities like that explicitly allow. There's quite a few examples in the Twin Cities where cities have explicitly prohibited. And then there's the in-between where maybe they set like a minimum house square footage of 900 square feet or something like that, where it's smaller, right? They could still fit in, but it's not that 400 square foot tiny house allowance either. So there's quite a wide range of things we can do. I know it's a whole new concept, so really what we're looking for is just opening discussion. If there's things that need clarification, if there's things I need to go in more detail about, feel free to let me know, but we'll kind of pass it back to you, Christina, and we'll kind of start from there.
All right, thanks. Thanks, Sarah. Commissioners, it's open discussion at this time. Yep, Steve.
Thank you, Sarah. Thanks for the work that you're putting in on this. A couple of comments. First, I would stipulate that we aren't talking about anything with any mobility in terms of the structure. It absolutely have to be meeting the definition of a tiny home, 400 square feet or under, and it would need to be on a foundation. It would need to have all city utilities. It would need to meet the building code. There are some exceptions that Appendix Q provides for things like narrower and different types of stairs, things like that, that you can use within these. I just had a conversation with a neighbor who moved in last year, and they said that if an option like this would have been available to them, they'd have much preferred that. They're a first-time homeowner, single person, never owned a home before, so it's a steep learning curve for them. And they would have quite enjoyed to have something like this. One of the things that I foresee, and with the permission of Sarah and the chair, if I can, I'd like to share a URL for a site called Pocket Neighborhoods. This is kind of the type of thing that I have in my head. If that's okay with everybody, I just want to send that in the chat right now. Is that all right?
Yeah.
All right. So that's a nice little resource for what something like this could look at, could look like. You have essentially your, for lack of a better way of explaining it to me, your front yards are all facing each other, facing out over a common area. And then you do a lot less with parking. You try to make this walkable. It's a community rather than a development. If you take a look at something like that, personally for me, that's the type of thing that I would envision us looking at potentially enabling. I'll stop there for the moment.
Thanks, Steve. Jeff.
Sarah, I've got just a couple of questions. The first two are kind of related to that first graph with the household and how many people are in the household. I just was curious as what kind of a definition they're using for household. I went and even looked up household, and they showed the U.S. Bureau of Census is two or more individuals related by birth, adoption, marriage. So going by their standards, how this gets below two, you know, I don't know exactly what they're calling a household. The second part of the question, maybe you can probably answer them both at the same time, is, but what is in, when they did this survey, what do they include in a household? Is it just like homeowners or houses with apartments? Do they go into nursing homes and count each room as a household? Where do they get all these numbers to make it so low? I would expect that a household to be in the three-ish or four-ish area. I know there's a lot of two people families, but somehow they must be counting a whole lot of single person in a unit to balance off that. And then I'll just get the last one and then get back to it. Of the 60 houses, I mean, 60 units out at the new apartment building at 72, do they have any idea at all where they're coming from? Are a good share of those 60 just transferring from housing in Wilmer that they don't like? How many of them are new coming into Wilmer? Where do those 60 people come from to give us an idea as far as our other housing units becoming empty? So I'll be real quick with that.
Sounds good. You're exactly right. It is the graph that you saw that was in your packet for households was taken from census data. So it is their definition. And a household is counted by people occupying a housing unit. So that would include your single family houses, your apartments, your duplexes, the whole nine yards. There are definitely countries, I think of like Italy, Japan, that are under 2.0. They're seeing a lot of people not getting married nearly as young, seeing families, you know, women not having as many children per person as well. Just came across an article today about that. I can't remember where from, but talking about the concern about that. We're just not, that kind of replacement rate, if you will, is significantly less than what it used to be. So it's people occupying a housing unit. is kind of how they occupy or how they address it. And that's why we don't have the 2020 data, is because we're still, well, we're in the middle of a census. Everybody take your census, please. Sneak that in wherever we get it. And then the 66, I had the same question when I was thinking about this today a little bit more. So I will get that information as best we can. I'm sure some of it's kind of private, but if we can get kind of a rough estimate of how many people are moving from in town, you know, obviously they, I think they put leases out back towards the beginning of this year. So I would have a feeling some of those early leases are people that currently have housing. It's hard to say whether a lot of them are actually moving from out of town that don't already commute, at least, right? Because you can't, it's hard to pre-lease an apartment that far ahead of time if you're not already here or planning to be here in August. So, but I will get that information of how many actually live in town or and how many are coming from out of town.
Cletus.
Sir, I have a few questions. You did a wonderful presentation. Just for information for the commissioners, is there any specific group or what's the source of the interest that's driving this discussion? And that's just one. I have several other questions too to follow up on that I think could help us.
So the initial inquiry was just from one private developer. Obviously, it's all kind of under wraps. He did offer to submit some sort of like site plan drawing, but I told him to kind of hold off, especially because he wanted to keep that a little bit more under wraps for the time being. So it was pursued by a single entity at this point, but why we kept going and digging without having him present something specific was because of this concern that because we don't have a minimum square footage for a size of a house, but we do for a size of a lot, that can create some major gap there. So we think that regardless of whether this single person entity moves forward with some sort of development or not, we should probably address this in some fashion.
Have any individuals, and I understand Steve's example of discussions with the neighbor, but has the city received any individuals inquiring about these options for their own housing needs?
Other than tiny, like inclusive of tiny homes and others, or just for tiny homes?
Of the tiny homes. And I understand that there's several different types that we're discussing
here. Right. Not specifically for tiny homes, but we do often get inquiries about where they might go for rental availability and leasing. I know the market can be really tight. I know we struggled to find a place when we first moved here 3 years ago. So we do get occasional inquiries like that, but we haven't specifically for renting a tiny home or leasing a tiny home or anything like that. That is a good point though to bring up too. Some of what we envision is wanting to get this scale of the house and the lot size a little bit more in line if we're going to move forward with allowing that kind of thing, because we would like to push for these to be an owner occupied option and not just some sort of like CIC plat, often rented. There probably would still be some sort of like homeowners association just because of the amount of common space that's included in all of this, but to have that ability for that owner occupied would really is, and you know, because Dave has talked a lot about his push for like these wider wider options, high-end ownership, lower-end ownership, higher-end rentals, lower-end rentals. We want options across the board, and that kind of 150-ish range, 100 to 150 $1,000 range for houses, that's probably one of the lower availabilities on the market just because they're snatched up so quickly.
If you take a look at the history of housing in Wilmer, and if you just drive through the older areas of Wilmer, you'll note that tiny homes were quite common back in the day. I mean, Wilmer has their share of tiny homes now. When you express a potential issue of the house size versus the lot size needing to come back into line if you're allowing tiny houses, I don't know if that's really an issue. Maybe that should be up for discussion if this issue goes forward. Just because you have a small house doesn't mean you should also allow a small lot. I mean, there's reasons for the lot sizes that we're mandating now, and oftentimes you do find reasonably small houses being built without even an issue being brought up of tiny homes. I note that we've got some examples here of how different communities, different cities have treated the issue. Bloomington is one of the cities cited as an example for expressly prohibiting. Others have mandated size limitations, others citing requirements to be in a certain location, and it would assist the commission if these examples, rather than being general isolated comments on how other communities address it, that we inquire further, what were the reasons for Bloomington's prohibitions? There must have been some issues going on or discussions going on as to the benefits and the burdens. And before we proceed in on an area like this, we should understand that going in. The information is fine, it gives us an overview, but it doesn't dig into these kind of issues. Land values, tax base, what the effects are, what happens after the first owner who builds a 150 square foot house decides to leave town and can't find a buyer. Now you have empty space, not producing tax revenue for the city. The minimum size ordinances, why did they go in that direction? You mentioned homeowners associations. You wouldn't normally find that unless it was a site development such as a PUD where it's all in one location. You're not going to find that if they're scattered throughout the community. Under our current ordinance, it would seem that a person could make application for a building permit, and there would, under the current ordinance, there would be no restrictions on what size of a building they build, and they could put them anywhere in the community. If that were to occur, I think you would probably hear a response from the neighborhoods. I recall a few years back, even when some condominium type or planned unit development type structures for residential were being built in Minnesota or within Wilmer, that there were the surrounding single family homeowners went up in arms. And those specific projects had to be specifically approved. Something like this, it would appear to me, if you're, as you're describing it, would be allowed under the current ordinances. Possibly needing to have some something addressed within the building code. These are comments that I think we, in further research, that I think we would benefit from, and I think the community may need to know. Can you tell me what are the applicable city offices' response to this? Have they been discussing it? The engineer's office, the zoning office, or hasn't it come up because it hasn't been there hasn't been any permits or applications or whatever for these type of structures?
Yeah, so a couple of things. You're exactly right. If somebody had a vacant lot right now and they wanted to put a tiny home on there, they could. If they were connected to, they met building code, they were connected to city utilities, there's no reason we wouldn't allow that. like you mentioned, not to say that the neighbors wouldn't come knocking at our doors, but there's no reason that couldn't happen right now. And that's part of the discussion tonight too, right? And you know, maybe a couple meetings too. I don't think we're going to come to an exact answer of this is what we're going to do tonight. I have a list going of some more research and more things that I'll bring forward to you, including that reach out to communities and kind of getting a little bit more anecdotal information on what was driving some of those decisions for those ordinances to be adopted. The Bemidji example, in that particular case, that has to be a PUD. It has to be that sort of tiny home, like development community concentrated area. And that's really what brought up the conversation, is because this particular individual that came forward saying, I want to do this tiny home development, is thinking that it would be in a, you know, say an 18,000 square foot area, half an acre area. I need to have 15 tiny houses there, but he wants some to be on individual lots. And that's just not, we don't have the standards in place to allow that. Mm-hmm. The lot sizes couldn't be small enough. Think back to if you go to the older neighborhoods of Wilmer, right? We still have the classic 50 by 100 lots. Downtown, we've got some 25 by 100 foot lots. And that's very, very, that tells the story, right? That housing size, like average housing size has increased over the years, which is why we bumped our minimum square footage for a lot requirement to be that 8,000 square feet. I wanna say, don't quote me on it, I think in the Bemidji example that I keep going back to just because it's clean in my head, that 600 square foot lot is only allowed when it's in this tiny home development. So it's not, you know, in the middle of an established neighborhood, a couple houses get torn down, or maybe just like one in the middle of the block. It wouldn't be the intention for that to then be developed into three tiny home lots or something like that. I think the intention of this would be more of that we're starting with a larger area, and kind of bringing it as a piece to the puzzle. I know our city engineer, I did happen to talk to him today as well. The city that he came from in Wyoming, as he was leaving, had just passed a tiny home ordinance, and I haven't looked it up yet or talked to anybody there. What he recalled was that you could divide an existing lot, but that existing lot had to be larger than their minimum. So say there's an 8,000 square foot lot in town, that's actually not eligible to be divided up for tiny homes. Your lot would have to be a minimum of 15,000 square feet, or, you know, whatever it was, for that, you know, trying to kind of keep it in that this is a new developed area that we're now establishing for tiny homes. Kind of like how we handle like mobile home parks and manufactured homes. If a manufactured home is going to be moved into town and placed in the middle of an established neighborhood right now, it has to have that vine, that horizontal vinyl siding. It has to have a pitched roof. It has to fit in with the neighborhood. It has to look like a house. I think we require it to be a certain width to 24 feet or 40 feet, or I can't quite remember how we measure it, but it has to be a certain size. So that'll make sense. Did I answer all of your questions?
Well, yes, I appreciate it, sir.
Yeah, absolutely. But I do have that on my list to do some more reach outs with those communities.
I can understand the arguments going both ways on lot size versus house size.
Yeah.
You know, if you take a look at the future use of the lot, if you allowed the small lot that is not in a confined area of small lots, what you're doing is destroying the value of that and limiting the use of that to a small house in perpetuity. The city that you were mentioning where the engineer came from, and where was it, Wyoming?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you keep the lot size a lot, it is, at least you preserve the lot size, you know, the size and the value of the bare land underneath it for future residential use.
Yeah.
And you've given people some space and buffer between each other. You know, one of the things I'm concerned with is Elm Lane situation and creating a permanent Elm Lane situation where each unit owner owns the land underneath them. Mm-hmm. You're not going to make that go away. And if it isn't developed properly and if it isn't maintained properly, it's going to be a very difficult situation for the city and the residents of that community to control. But just my thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did note, and I've always told this to people when the Elm Lane comes up for discussion, that the best thing that happened was spreading those residents within the overall community, because now they had to live amongst everybody and maintain themselves and their relationships with their neighbors rather than living on top of each other in a poverty-like setting.
I agree with Cleet. That's one of the things that really started changing the city was when the folks and when I first moved to town, that's where I lived. That's the only place I could find a roof over my head was in Elm Lane. But when they closed that and everybody had to find a place to live in town, it changed the neighborhoods for everybody. Some for the better, some for the worse, but overall, now you had everybody, you kind of learn by osmosis. You know, you learn by example from the existing neighbors, you know, what is involved in taking care of a home. Folks establishing those types of relationships. I don't envision an Elm Lane type of development. I believe that we would want to have stringent enough standards in place and incentive enough where people are going to want to, if they want to take advantage of a housing type like this, for example, ultra affordable housing, essentially. Under that $100,000 range, very much starter homes. It could be a potential option, but when you put that within the context of an actual community of people who are, you know, have similar economic background, status, that type of thing, that can be a very supportive environment, I should think, and that's what the type of thing that I would like to like us to lean toward if we go down this road. Again, I have no interest in creating a an undesirable neighborhood. I don't think any of us do.
Terry.
I'm curious. Does the city of Wilmer, as it stands now, have any suitable areas that this would work inside the city, or is this stuff where we're talking expansion or outside of, you know, city proper, I guess?
The inquiry that we received just for some parcels that currently exist in town. I won't say more than that in an effort not to give it too much away, but there are some areas in town where we think that, you know, this might fit. They're fewer and further between, again, because we don't want to be piecemealing something together. That's not really the vision. It's more about a very classic PUD sort of development that we would envision for the type of use. There might also, you know, maybe some future annexation land, should there be. There are a couple areas in Townsville that haven't been developed, largely because of utility access, which is just as much of an issue, especially with this, if the homes are going to be of lower value, those utilities are going to cost more per dwelling, perhaps, in comparison to the price of the homes themselves. So there's lots that go into that bottom line that might not be super feasible, but there's definitely some undeveloped land in town that would be suitable for this, yeah.
Thank you.
Just briefly, I just recalled something that I wanted to mention earlier. There are some developments out there in the country that are potentially using the concept of a community land trust to make this perpetually affordable housing as well, and that might be something that you could, for example, see a Southwest Minnesota Housing Partnership type of organization come along with a proposal for something along those lines. I think there's a lot of flexibility in this, and certainly this is a niche product. It's not going to be for everyone. Although I did want to ask everybody, you know, can any of you envision yourself in a 400 square foot dwelling? Okay, now the follow-up question to that is, how many of you have lived in a 400 square foot dwelling unit? Okay, I mean, this goes back a long time when I was, you know, when I was just out of college, but you can make something like that work. It's not ideal, but that kind of gives you the idea of perhaps consumer who might want to have access to something like this, get on their feet, build up a little equity, and then as they're getting ready to build a family, then perhaps they graduate off into something like that. That's something larger. That's the type of thing that I envision here.
Yeah, Jeff.
Getting back to the, like, having a group of these tiny homes together, I would think if you did do it, you wouldn't want to make it a huge development that had room for 30 or 40 of these. It seems like the people that have these are kind of really, from what I see, watch the shows on TV, they're kind of individualists and they don't like to be grouped into that. So, I mean, I would think if they, you know, if it went and you approve some kind of a concept with smaller lots in it, you'd want to keep them relatively small. You wouldn't want to get a whole big bunch that would start to look or resemble a trailer mobile home park type of thing, that you maybe put 10 in here and some over there and in different parts of town rather than one big, huge one. I would think, and it might help the what people think of them type of thing that way. So anyway, that's it.
No, I would just like to say, I really, hats off to you, Sarah, and the city for approaching this in a problem-solving manner instead of just flat out rejecting the concept. I'm glad we're having this discussion, looking for solutions that, yeah, this is not going to solve the housing crisis we're in, but it could potentially be one piece to a large problem that is large, often unaddressed. And I think it says a lot for what we do in Willmar to find solutions rather than flat out reject things. I mean, I do agree with a lot of what was said, that we should be mindful of
current property values and current neighborhoods. It sounds like you want to craft some ordinance carefully to make it amenable, but also workable, a good workable solution for people that are looking for a little piece that's theirs.
Question for Sarah. Sarah, right now, like you stated that somebody wanted to come in on an existing lot and put one of these in, there was no way you could really stop them as long as they met the permanent utilities, the foundation and stuff like that. Would that put the city behind the curve then, if all of a sudden you had one move in, that all of a sudden you could start doing that one, and then the city is, then everybody is scrambling trying to figure out how to do that? Or would it be a good idea somehow to put a little bit of a pause on somebody doing that until this has been thoroughly thought through and whatnot, so that it didn't establish a precedence?
Yeah, I think at this point, because we've started these discussions, I hope this doesn't drag out too terribly long. I know sometimes that can get away from us just with research and all of the stuff that goes into creating these sort of things. But I think at this point, because these discussions have started and we don't really have an exact answer, we're working on crafting that. I haven't seen anything up until this point. I have a really hard time thinking that we can go as far as having some sort of moratorium or temporary moratorium on allowing that kind of thing, just because I don't anticipate seeing anything. If something happens to come up, you know, our office is probably the first one to know about it, because that's where the building permits would come through, in which case we can kind of address it then. But I think at this point, because we haven't really seen something like that, I wouldn't be too worried about it at this point. But the thought that, you know, that could have happened at any time, which, you know, maybe isn't necessarily the worst thing ever. But just knowing, I think it's interesting to know where things stand now and where those things might, you know, just kind of what the state of our allowance is at the time being. So
I'd like to respond to Sarah's comment. I do agree, if someone did come with an application for a building permit, it would likely push the issue. I think one of the reasons why you haven't seen it so much in this community is the cost of a lot. If you're looking at try and find a lot within the city limits that's under 30,000, it's pretty tough. A desirable lot. And then utilities, there's all of the hookups. We have a new snow ordinance that requires certain restrictions on parking. And if you're going to make the lot small and the house is small, what are the streets going to be like for access? Where are the vehicles going to be parked if there's no room on the small streets? There's unlikely to be garages on these lots. I've watched these shows too. It has interested me. One of the goals is to try and get that structure built with no prior experience in most cases, and with minimum cost in most cases. And some of those results are very fine looking structures. Others could be a problem for themselves, for the successors that own those structures, and for the neighbors that live around them. Fire issues, yeah, there may be certain other issues that also would need to be discussed in moving forward with some kind of an ordinance or an amendment to the existing ordinances to facilitate this type of concept.
Yeah, Steve.
Yeah, I agree, Cleet. The standards certainly need to be robust, and I think simply the fact that if we were going to allow this, to my mind, we would only allow it on a foundation. More than likely stick built, and it would have to meet the building codes. I think it's an entirely different animal than somebody buying a trailer and building a mobile unit on a trailer. I just don't think that you can compare the two in any other way except that they're small. I think the type of thing that we should be looking at is quite frankly more than adequate housing if it meets the building code. And then we're also just while we're kind of on the subject, a little tangent here, we're also missing some housing types in town that some folks describe it as a missing middle, something between the affordable housing and the upscale housing and mixed type housing units, including duplexes, triplexes, mixed in with single family homes, and not a lot of intentionality put towards developments like that. I think that's going to be another point of discussion, especially when we enter into those discussions regarding the comp plan.
Jeff?
Well, Cleet kind of rattled my whatever on this one. So you can have a 400 foot square foot house, and you can have a 700 square foot garage for your cars and your other belongings sitting in beside it or back of it.
Well, Jeff, if you read the information, some of these houses are as small as 150 square feet.
Yeah.
10 by 15.
I was going by the biggest ones, just the 400 foot. Yeah. Okay.
Anything else from the commissioners? Yep.
Sarah, just a question. In the discussions that a developer has possibly had with you, are they talking anything that small, or is it closer to the regular 400 square feet?
You know, they all looked pretty similar when I saw the site plan, so I would assume that they're probably in that like 300 to 400 square foot size. You know, granted that 300 to 400 square foot doesn't include loft space, so there might be kind of a second story in there or something like that.
And then a lot of I know that a lot of these that you see, at least conceptually, they have in fact, I think they talk about it in this pocket neighborhoods resource. They require porches front and back, so that you have some additional of that exterior living space. And if you have a lot size that's big enough where like they can go out and have a barbecue, have a little private party back there, and then you have something on the other side, the more facing the commons area, and also perhaps you require a community type of gathering space for people to access and potentially be able to hold gatherings there. There's a whole lot of I think if we spend too much time necessarily on the housing type and size, we miss the point that perhaps what we should be thinking about is what type of neighborhood can you develop around this housing type. That's kind of where I'm at today.
Any other questions or comments from the commissioners?
Sarah, what do you foresee with this going forward?
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. I think the next step is for me to do a little bit more digging, especially some of that those stories from some cities that have made some deliberate decisions and adopted ordinances for or against or in between. And then we can kind of continue to analyze it from there. I think timelines will probably depend on the direction we ultimately end up going, right? Prohibiting them is going to take a whole lot less language than it will be to set up all of the standards. Though I have a feeling there's probably some examples out there for attorneys, for our attorneys to utilize to at least give us kind of a boilerplate starting point so that we can continue to document some of these desires. I'm starting to get a feel for kind of if we do want to allow them kind of the direction we might start to go on some bare bones examples of those kind of things. But I think the best step would probably be we won't plan on starting to draft anything at this point unless I'm reading the room wrong. But we'll probably do a second round of something similar like this, but just a little bit deeper. We'll talk more specifically about where some of those communities landed on their decisions and why they did. How does that sound?
Thanks, Sarah. I think that would be very helpful. My interpretation, and commissioners, please correct me if I'm wrong, is that there's definite curiosity about doing something like this, but yeah, getting that information will be very helpful in reaching a consensus.
I'm really interested to see what Bemidji's doing.
Jeff, did you have something?
Yeah, Sarah, that's maybe 2 years back, but when we had discussions about the, I don't know, it was almost called the in-law house type of thing in the backyards and stuff with, that were much more square footage than these, but it was the second house on the same lot. It had to have its own utilities and stuff like that. Does that play into this whole discussion too? I mean, we talked about that and then it kind of just went its own way because nobody else had it, but that's the question, I guess.
Yeah, that's not a direction we talked about tonight, but that's certainly another direction in addition to or instead of that could be. And in a lot of, actually in quite a few of the articles and different research that I was doing, kind of the mother-in-law house type of thing was brought up, as they would say, either they allow tiny homes or not. And then in addition to that, either they allow that second smaller dwelling unit or not. And often with that second dwelling unit, it's an accessory structure, and it's a dwelling unit, but it doesn't actually, like, usually the line is drawn that it doesn't have a kitchen in it, which is interesting. So I could certainly add that to the exploration if we wanted to. Definitely another added piece there too.
Steve, did you have something?
Yeah, I recall that discussion, and there wasn't much. I recall there wasn't much appetite to take that on at the time. I think there were too many questions. These were actually potentially some of them could just be moved on site as a more temporary type of thing. I know that was. I recall that was part of the discussion. I would like us to not bring that in as part of the discussion at this time. I think they're two separate and distinct things, and I don't think you want to muddy one with the other.
Yeah.
To follow up with Steve's comment, that type of a project would require amendment of our existing ordinances, whereas the situation now stands, you actually could conceivably purchase a lot and construct a tiny home under the current ordinances.
Yeah, as long as it was the primary structure.
Okay, if there is no further discussion, Sarah, I think you have, do you have what you need? Great, I think we're ready to move on to miscellany.
Not a whole lot, but I do have one announcement. Just today, I received Jerry Kiergaard's resignation. A bit unexpectedly, but it sounds like life has just changed a little bit. He served for almost 3 years. He started right when I did. So with that in mind, it's a little early, but probably something to be considering. Steve and Rolf will both be at the end of their terms with us. They've both served their full 2 terms as of December of this year. And then Jerry would have been the one renewed and continuing on for another 3 years after that. So we will have 3 seats open at the end of this year. And as much as we can avoid that, the better. So if we can start thinking about people that you know that might have interest, Planning Commission's a pretty big deal. We'll probably go ahead. I think what I'll do is I'll also reach out to Vision 2040 and like the chamber leadership perspective. Kind of alumni groups that they have, because I know they push a lot of community involvement and that kind of thing. So we'll start putting feelers out there at this point, because Jerry has resigned. What can happen is we can go ahead and fill his position ahead of January, which would be ideal in my opinion, because then that next person could be on for a few months and kind of get the feel of things a little bit before we have 2 more commissioners leave instead of starting fresh with 3 new people. That can be a lot, especially for this very active group. So if we could find somebody before the end of the year for Jerry's position, that would be ideal. What they would do is they would go ahead and finish. It would technically be finishing Jerry's term, and then come January, they could decide if they want to renew. And that's when they would start their first 3-year term. So they'd kind of be in like a term 0 for 6 months to kind of get a feel for things too. So if you know of anybody, feel free to pass them along. I tend to have conversations with people before they submit the application, though, for boards and commissions and stuff of the city is online. So it's the same form for everybody. I think you just go to like, I want to at the top of the website, and then there'll be an apply for option, and then you can find like boards and commissions under that, and then that will just be submitted to our administration office, and then it goes through council. So it does take about a month to get that all through the process, but we can get them started and whatnot at the end of the year. Great. That's all I have.
All right, thank you. It's sad news, but thank you for performing the commission. With that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Motion made.
My dog is seconding.
Seconded?
Oh, it's you.
So sorry.
All in favor? Signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? We are adjourned.